for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground recorded each week, 72 episodes, they flow by like a creek. Some come to Bitcoin because they've never been, an object of success they feel never seen. Now object to the mess, they feel clever, clean up but can't filter the cess, blue steel forever, seen. Broken incentives drive behavior that's obscene, see, cyber hornets, hive savior, swarm for their queen bee. Ain't got 99 problems, this is a moment of clarity, public service announcement, bestowment of charity, not another J to help me Z, not a bother, even Ray could see, blindingly obvious, even Stevie wondering, what would be, what's the ruse, they plundering, what they could, fees that confuse, pondering, on the path less well used, I've been wandering. Price set at the margin, it trades in ranges, scaling not yet ready, need a two-pack of changes. I'm never bearish, you can never kill a bull, kill the gold, matador, squeeze another syllable. Some of my expressions might be superfluous, spot the next recession, Jupiter, who us? Minimalism is trying to live with less, son, sometimes your favorite people become your toughest lesson. In the fiat world, it's about what you can pillage. With wealth stored physically, you can't protect your village. Bitcoin-like life where the difficulty's not static, adjustment unpredictable, but the timing automatic. Prepare for success, but don't live life like you're beat. No rest sats, I profess, but revenge is sweet. Can't trust sexes, can't leave your coin with Trabuco, so bet on yourself like Giacomo Zucco.
Boom. Absolutely awesome. And that's right, guys. That's right. It is another episode of Pleb Underground, and joining us, is the legend. That's right. We've got Giacomo Zucco. Thank you very much for joining us, man.
My honor. I didn't know there was a rap song with my name.
Oh, there's a rap song.
I'm absolutely impressed. Well, glad to be back.
If you can do the Zuckbucks, then we can do the rap song. Okay.
Zucco Bucos.
All right, guys. We're going to move it on over to the numbers. At the time of this recording, the block height is 827,508. The Bitcoin fiat exchange, 42,078. Moscow time, 2376. Total public lightning capacity, 4,905. Days to the halvening. That's right, 86. Guys, fastest fee, 43. You know what? That may be the fastest fee, but I saw 27 sats per V bytes.
Phil, yeah. my transaction, my consolidation that I put in maybe 2 weeks ago now, when we just dipped below 30, I put in a consolidation transaction at 25, and then a whole bunch of stuff got dumped. It cleared. We've got a few hundred confirmations. I'm feeling pumped. Yeah, the fees are dropping a little bit. Less shitcoins going on? Like, what's going on? Did they get bored? Did they run out of money? Did they not pay attention?
What do you think, Giacomo? Are the BRC minters done minting?
So the BRC20 crowd is multifaceted. There is the BSV people that started it, that created most of the infrastructure, and they are possibly short of money with all the Craig Wright situation that we will discuss. Maybe Kelvin Eyre doesn't have a lot of sponsorship for shitcoins right now. Then there is all the Ethereum crowd. Gavin Wood and Vitalik Buterin are invested in Taproot Wizard. So there is that crowd. But they also have some other problems to face right now with the ETH BTC price, which is not going to flip anytime soon. So everybody's probably distracted. I don't think yet we are seeing any government budget involved in spamming the chain. So that's probably not the case yet. So maybe we can have some time of relief until we have the next big craziness. The general NFT hype was dead already. And this resurrection, this brief resurrection, this zombie movie of the NFT on Bitcoin is probably going, you know how zombies are, they lose pieces, they cannot work very fast, they're not smart, so zombies are probably going to be easily killed with some kind of headshot.
Yeah, what is ETH BTC right now? Because I'm pretty sure I remember, like, I had a friend like who likes to be a bit of a trader, and he was like, oh, you know, bought it at like 0.08. He's like, oh yeah, it's gonna go back to like 0.15. I'm pretty sure we're now at like 0.05 or something. It's like five. I mean, I think the correct price of Ethereum is nothing, right? It's a complete scam. It's the I called it the WeWork of scam startups, right? Because it's a it's a house for all of the bullshit. But there's nothing makes me happier than when Bitcoin pumps and ETH is dropping at the same time. It was beautiful.
Yes, Saifedean called it the mother shithole of all shitcoins. So that's a very appropriate definition. It's a meta scam, not only a scam but also enabler of a bunch of other scam and of the general scam culture that became prevalent after 2017. So Ethereum basically was a main part in legitimizing what in Bitcoin culture was seen with annoyance from the beginning, like pre-mines, centralization, checkpoints, fraudulent claims. Everything existed before 2016, 2015, but it was frowned upon by most people. And then Ethereum was a great operation to shift the Overton windows in which all that bullshit is considered normal. And in order to be called a scammer by the general public, you have to go to extreme length. Like you get to Richard Hart levels. You really have to force it to be called a scammer.
What do you mean? Richard Hart made the, some type of deposit. He made the only CD. Right, the only digital CD or something like that.
At this point, I almost feel sympathy for obvious scammers, because obvious scammers are targeting people that are any way beyond help. So people that fell for one coin, I'm sorry for them, but how can you help them? I mean, it's clear that everything you teach, everything you try to say to expose, they are beyond. So in a way, they are targeting people that will be targeted by somebody else inevitably. While Ethereum level of scams, they target half intelligence people, like midwits in a word. So people that are too
like
smart
TradFi.
For yeah. Well, yes, TradFi is small teenagers that are over exuberant or even just ignorant pre-coiners that find Bitcoin, they are rightly skeptical, then Bitcoin works. But then they feel late, and so they want the new shiny things, and they go for Ethereum. So it's a typical midwit trap, which can destroy, can waste time, money, reputation, also for people that maybe, for example, one smart contract developer on Ethereum maybe could have been a good web developer in JavaScript. So a good front-end developer, and his career and money and time and reputation was wasted in some Web3 Ponzi scheme. That's a pity. While the people investing in one coin, I mean, sorry, but probably beyond any reach.
So Do you think some of these guys are getting replaced with some of these kind of AI tools? Because it seems like they're getting better at, you know, creating websites and that sort of thing.
They are, but you know, just like with text, like a language model or images, they are great if you're producing something that you don't need to be accurate at all. So if you have to mass produce something, so Indian front-end factories may be partially replaced by this kind of models, while actual controllable work focused to some, try to get stable diffusion to do exactly what you want. It can't. It can do something impressive with very low effort, but you cannot get it exactly where you want. So for example, with test, you can replace stuff that nobody will read, like journal, newspapers, this kind of stuff. I mean, journalists, nobody read them anyway. So you can replace them. Or government documents, like nobody's going to read them. You can be very convincing. Nobody's going to read with attention anyway. Or schoolworks, the professors don't have the time to read it. Same stuff with code. If you want to do a bunch of stuff that does kind of work, yes. But if you want to do any work of precision, you cannot use those kind of models, but you could use a 16-year-old JavaScript developer that may be wasting time trying to push some scam coin on retail.
I have a question for you regarding ordinals, because something I'm seeing kind of float around the space is that, you know, TradFi, right, is somehow going to care about ordinals development on BTC and what that means for the ecosystem. Do you actually think that that TradFi is looking at something like that as, I don't know, some type of adoption or innovation? Or I'm sorry, I'm like cringing saying these words because, you know, it's
Are
like imagining
Fred Krueger again.
Oh, dude, that guy's wrecked, man. I'm sorry, Giacomo, go on.
No, so let's clarify first that if we talk about the actual content in this ordinal hype, there is no innovation at all. As the point I tried to make in my speech in Prague, ordinals are retarded, is that the exact ordinal scheme was conceived in 2012. You can still find it. We can put it in the description later if you want. In 2012, there is a Bitcoin talk of a guy that invented ordinals. Then people discussed ordinals, exactly the same scheme. And somebody said, this is bad for privacy and fungibility. And somebody else says, this is bad for incentives, what is now called MEV. So the fact that you can basically have a small Bitcoin transaction carrying a lot of off-chain value, so miners can play tricks, which is not good, is unpredictable. And also it's bad for scalability and divisibility because you have to use actual UTXOs and Satoshis are not very well divisible and stuff like that. So this objection made this initial idea disappear, and the idea evolved into something else that later on went to Liquid CA or RGB. So if you really want, so my opinion is, if you want to do a centralized asset, just use MySQL. That's better. That's honest. That doesn't scam anybody. But if you really, really want, for some reason, use some decentralized buzzword, then you can do it without hurting privacy and incentives on Bitcoin. For example, using RGB or other things. So that's the general framework. That said, TradFi will not follow logic or history. They will just follow hypes because that's the most fiat thing you can do. Right. The similarity between crypto and fiat is that you are just short-term, high time preference. You just follow the last current thing and you don't care about sustainability, about rationality, about consistency. You just go with the Fed. And the Fed in this case was NFT. It was as big, if not bigger, than ICO in 2017. In 2021, most of my clients were calling. They were coming out of the fucking walls asking for NFTs. Every kind of traditional clients, even like a gun producer in Italy, a comic book producer in the US. Everybody was doing NFT. That died out, and now ordinals may inherit a little part of that because it's, as I said, like the little zombie resurrection of this hype cycle. Hopefully, I mean, the good thing is that the new Bitcoin bull market, which is very likely, will probably bring another kind of bullshit hype. This may displace the current NFT zombies in ordinals. So this could go away, but not because people will become immediately smarter, just because some other bullshit will probably take its place.
Guys, I'd like to share just one little chart to do with numbers, and that's looking here, a tweet from James Lavish, looking at GBTC and what's been happening. GBTC, I believe, dropped their fees from 2% to 1.5% and said that their management fee was justified by the size, the liquidity, and the track record of the company. The market said no. When we see GBTC fund flows decreasing, right? The funds flowing out of GBTC into a bunch of these ETFs. I have a couple of questions about this. Do we think that some sort of deal has been done by Barry with legal authorities to essentially get him out of some legal troubles? Because it's amazing the timing of this, that the ETFs get launched at the same time that GBTC essentially gets unlocked, right? And he is then able to supply TradFi with the Bitcoin that they're looking for these ETFs. Gents?
I think there is a overt explanation that doesn't require any backroom deal, which is the fact that GBTC itself was finally converted into an ETF. They asked that for several times. They have been denied, but when the other vehicles were authorized, there were no ground to prevent them. So the fact that the coincidence in timing of GBTC being able to dump was actually natural considering this. But the fact that he also had legal trouble exactly at the same time is strange. And maybe there is a connection after all. When people get in legal trouble, they will probably accept everything. And Barry was already, it was already not above accepting compromises or creating compromises against Bitcoin. Barry was the main actor behind the New York agreement attack on Bitcoin. So I cannot say I'm crying right now if something bad happens to him.
I also want to point out that he seems to put out these tweets, right? Like, this is going to be a big week.
I think I said it 2 weeks ago or something. He said it's going to be a big week, probably because he was getting off. Yeah.
And it's always for him, right? It's always a big week for him. So it's whenever he puts out those tweets, I cringe because I know it's going to be weird. And look, what I said, my whole tinfoil hat take on this was that it's the changing of the guard, so to speak, right? Like, you know, you've got the way that it looks to me, it's like a TV show, right? You've got Barry Silbert, DCG, they collected all of this Bitcoin, right? It's GBTC, it's a ticker. And then all of a sudden, right, TradFi feels safe enough. And, you know, the bigger players in the space are now all, you know, kind of in sync. And lo and behold, right? Lo and behold, it's like, hey, look, you know what? We're gonna do these ETFs. All of a sudden, Barry can now start, you know, they can start to loosen up on the GBTC. And miraculously, the BTC flows from this tiny kind of crapsicle institute to now like the traditional players that essentially the people that make the space look legitimate, right? Like if we look at it in terms of TradFi, right, we're not thinking of it in terms of our echo chamber. Look at it from the average person. What these people are doing with the ETFs, they're legitimizing the space. That's really what's happening anyways. So for me, we're just looking at a changing of the guard. That's really what it is. Anyways, guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. This wraps up the numbers, and we're going to move it on over to the Fireside Chat. The Fireside Chat is brought to you by BTC Pins. Check them out at btcpins.com. Awesome pins by a fellow Bitcoiner. I always like to show my collection. Here it is. Absolutely awesome pins made by BTC Pins. Use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND for 5% off at btcpins.com. Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into the Fireside Chat with Giacomo. Giacomo, I started following you a very long time ago in Bitcoin. I've always found you to be a very interesting character because you dispel knowledge, but you do it through this very comedic type of aspect. And I'm a huge fan of comedy. I believe that comedy is like the hidden truth teller. You know, it's like the hidden truth teller in society. Now, it's great that we have you on this particular episode at this time because we're talking about CTV, we're talking about APO, and I told you before the show I wanted to discuss this because I did see a tweet from you at one point mentioning something about CTV and essentially, you know, just saying that people that are supporting it are retards or whatever it is, like something along those lines. But and you know, like I feel that many Bitcoiners, right, as much as they try to be technical, they, you know, it's not easy to wrap our heads around really what's going on. So let me ask you, do you think CTV is a social attack?
No, in itself, I think not. I think that though, unfortunately, the campaign to activate CTV may be overlapping socially and not technically with some kind of social attacks, including to a degree the ordinal subscriptions attack, including in general they changed the protocol for the sake of it attack, including the less takeover and less disrupt the core process development attack. So there are many social attacks that may be organized or even spontaneous, because attacks can also be endogenous and not really directed from somebody else. And these attacks may overlap a little bit for the specific campaign. Let me give you, if we have time, a little bit of my personal story with CTV, so I can express better what I think.
Yeah.
So covenants as an idea, as an idea that you can actually lock some sets with the condition that will not just affect when you spend it, but also how you spend them. So basically it affects also the next transaction and not just the immediate one. This idea was first proposed to my ears by Emin Galsir. So, you know, the shitcoin guy, the Cornell professor, super shitcoiner, very bad actor.
Avalanche or something, Avalanche. Is it?
Yeah, it was him. I was the organizer of Scaling Bitcoin to Scaling Bitcoin 3 Milan. So I was the in the program committee. There was this paper. I didn't like the many things of the character and the paper, but we ended up accepting it. He presented it. And the idea of covenants seemed very, very artificial to me, specifically because, as Peter Todd pointed out during Scaling Bitcoin, it was 2016, most of the things you could do with covenants that Emin was proposing, you could do already with a pre-signed multi-sig. The difficulty was actually to freaking do the pre-signing, to organize the social process, to organize the methodology, which is super difficult, to have the tools to make it simple. But that was the difficult part, not really the, not really the protocol part. And in a way, that was the first symptom of this idea that every time that the protocol has limits, and now you have to overcome the limits with hard work, building the process, building the UX, building the wallet, building the standards, building the user education. This is the hard work. You don't want to do that. And so you just want to short circuit. You just want to jump, to skip that, and to just introduce a new protocol primitives that of course, it would also be missing all the intermediate and ultimate work on UX, on tools, on everything. So you just go back to zero, but now with this messianic expectation of a silver bullet that will change everything. Back then it was custody, and these vaults with covenants were changing custody. And I was working with custody with my clients, and my impression was, no, this, the problem is educating clients. The problem is that people are stupid. The problem is that they don't understand the risk of a bearer instrument. The covenants will not change this. We did hard work. Then a lot of time passed, and there was this idea of Christian Decker and also others like Russell, Rusty, and Oshuntoku, Lalu, to do L2. So to do a new kind of Lightning Network, because Lightning Network has some pains. Specifically, it's difficult to move from a two-party channel to a multi-party channel. That's possible, but very, very hard to do. And it's difficult to keep backups, and that will become a pain even more in the future. So Lightning is great, but the channel we use now is very limited. So of course, even here, you could say the same thing that I said to covenants at the beginning. Yes, instead of introducing this any prevout SIGASH, which is back then it was called SIGASH no input, now is any prevout. But instead of introducing this, first you have to finish to all the hard work on Lightning Network. But in that case, I found the objection less relevant, because the problem is that building all these difficult things for backup and multi-party channels in Lightning without any prevout, and then adding any prevout, would make most of the work before useless. So you will spend a year building the bad channels, and then you introduce any prevout, and now you have to change all the network to the new kind of channels that are actually simpler. So this kind of covenant, because any prevout is a form of covenant, even if it's not an opcode, it's a SIGASH, but it's still a covenant operator. This, I was a big supporter of it. Like, yes, let's go any prevout, that's great. The problem is that socially, nobody was pushy enough about any prevout. It was not introduced in the same. It was, some people was considering to put it inside Taproot. It was considered, discussed, but then it just, nobody was pushing very hard. So it slipped out. And then it arrived CTV, which was coming from the old vault idea. So it was a kind of covenant that was in a way similar to any pre-vault. It could do something similar, but the narrative was all about security and vaults, which was unconvincing to me. And especially the main proponent, Jeremy Rubin, was a developer that was, let's say, controversial. For example, I always find him a little bit annoying for specific positions. Like, for example, he was the guy that proposed to CZ to reorg the chain in order to undo some hack. So in a way, I understand Jeremy's philosophy. Jeremy's philosophy is, if this is technically possible, we should stress it out. But he does it in a way that that feels to me like he doesn't care about Bitcoin. Like, this is just a toy. Let's play with it. Let's see if it breaks. To an extent, it's true that Bitcoin must be resilient. And if we find the flaw, we should not just hide the head under the sand. We should face it. But this is not a toy. Many lives depend on it. And maybe the civilization, our civilization, will strongly correlate with Bitcoin. So this is not a toy that you just go on and you just say, CV, I will help you to write the code to do a deep reorg on the chain. Just like it's nothing, just like a game. And there were other small things about Jeremy. And Jeremy also organized an attempt to activate it without reaching consensus with the main core developer. So an activation client that was ready. So people got pissed, they stopped him, and now the CTV campaign was kind of dead in 2000, let's say 2022. It was kind of dead. Then right now, recently, there was a resurgence of campaign, which I think on one side is better. Why? Because some developers like Riordan with Alan Hans' proposal understood that the security implication of covenants are actually not very appealing for Bitcoiners. And they are not, because again, the difficulty of cold storage are enormous, but they are not in the fact that you have to presign or in the fact that you have to redeposit. That's not the difficulty. The difficulty is practical, it's procedural. While in the scaling, in Lightning Channel, the possibility to have cold channels, so channels that you create but you do not declare, or pools, or something like Arc, or something like, again, L2, like Lightning Symmetry, all these different models of Lightning channels, they are very useful for users, especially now that we start to feel the pain of the scalability, which is better with Lightning than without. But even with Lightning, it's still very challenging on Bitcoin because you need fees to open a Lightning channel. You need time to open a Lightning channel. It's not a silver bullet. Lightning is better than not Lightning. But now we have to do a lot of stuff. So some people packaged CTV together with the Checksign Tool for Stack and another kind of stuff, several combination. And now one combination is Alan Hans, which is also a very good name, that I think had a very good marketing, because it was, let's not just, the typical mentality I was saying before is, let's try Lightning, let's be over-optimistic, oh, it doesn't work, let's throw it away, and let's do everything else with a new shiny thing. That's bullshit, with a new shiny thing, we will have to start all again, and you will find other problems, other defects, Arc as a problem of liquidity, etc. So the mentality of LNS was, we have Lightning, let's keep building Lightning. And this new soft fork is it's key into improving gradually Lightning without tossing everything away. So that was a good marketing. Unfortunately, the connection with Jeremy Rubin was also claiming that ordinals were the most exciting innovation in Bitcoin right now. It's probably half ironic because he likes to troll. But that was considered true by many people. That misled many people. So the connection with him and the fact that he's friend with the ordinal guy and also Casey. With Casey and with Udi and with Eric. So they are this kind of bunch of people that like to trigger people. So the fact that there's this social overlap, I think, is making problematic to we will see. But basically right now, the division of developers is some developer want to be very conservative and they just want to do like any pre-vault, like Z-Man, the Lightning developer, anonymous one, is very respected, and he just wants any pre-vault. Some people want more, like they want something like TX Ash, because at this point, they say, let's do more. So there are like two extreme, and CTV is possibly a good compromise technically, but there is a social element to it. And I think that many engineers, they have trouble understanding the social layer precedence, which to many people, it's more important than code. So the typical response is, oh, why do you care about who is proposing it? Just look at the code. That's not how a big social system carrying a lot of money works. Because if you, for example, if you accept some code because New York Agreement and Barry Silbert told you to accept it, even if the code is good, turns out it was not. BTC1 was a bad code. But even if BTC1 was good, the fact that you accept it because you were strong-armed by this kind of social takeover was itself a dangerous precedence for Bitcoin. So it's better to miss a good soft fork without enabling a dangerous social precedence than instead having the good code and enabling a bad precedence. So my opinion right now is covenants for Lightning are good. Probably CTV is technically a good proposal. It's not especially connected with others like in LNNs. I think that it would be a good service to CTV and the proposal to dissociate from both things, from the attempt of out of consensus pushing and from the ordinal scam. Because if as long as you stay connected, some immune reaction from the ecosystem will happen. And I will not feel like blaming the immune reaction because it's natural. They use social heuristics like this bad actor are doing this. And so I don't trust it, which makes sense.
Giacomo, I have one question. I want to go back and talk a little bit about custody. I had an amusing interaction this week where I saw a tweet from Bitwise, one of the ETFs, and they published the Bitcoin address of their holdings, right? And I just thought it was funny. Legacy finance using legacy addresses. But what was even more amusing was the CEO of this fund responded to me, and I'm a nobody on Twitter, but he said, very true, team working to upgrade. And I thought, okay, this is funny. This guy on his profile said he has 7 years in crypto, and he's replying to me saying they're working to upgrade their custody solutions, seemingly $500 million of Bitcoin stored in a single SIG. Now, I say seemingly, it doesn't say this in my tweet, because the likeliness actually is that it may well be stored in some sort of multi-sig, but that multi-sig happens off chain, right? And he talks here a little bit about that you know, they have a qualified custodian, they're not using SegWit or Taproot, but he says that there's not a security issue with I think you're raising a concern about the signature configuration. I think it's good and valid, though I don't love that. I believe you're insinuating that either we don't care about security or don't understand it, because this is a core responsibility of ours. But at the same time, I think it's healthy to scrutinize companies like us. And then I think links to some post from maybe a colleague of his discussing this. But can you for a moment talk a little bit about MPC, talk about my understanding, kind of multi-party custodians, multi-party computation, multi-sig that essentially happens not on Bitcoin.
Yeah, there are two kinds of off-chain multi-sig. One, which is the one that they may be using for in this case as well. I'm a little bit skeptical, but they may be using it. I've seen several clients using it for shitcoins, for example, because like in 2017, some of my clients, against my advice, they started to sell, they were Swiss banks selling Ethereum or Ripple products. And back then there was no multisig in Ripple or Ethereum. Ethereum, there was the parity wallet that was broken and stuff like that. So what they did was one single key, but the key is included into a safe hardware machine, safe if you trust the producer, like a Gemalto machine or a STMicroelectronics. In some cases, it was Ledger Vault. So you have a machine. The machine will take care of the single key for the blockchain of reference. And then if you come with smart cards and other off-chain keys, you will use the off-chain combination to convince the machine to release the actual keys. So this was inevitable for shitcoins because there was no native multisig skin in like Ethereum or Ripple. But for Bitcoin, I always advise the gains, because the problem with that is that you have a single point of failure. It could be the producer of asset or of the HSM or any kind of the fact that everybody must be in the same. There must be a moment in which all the keys are inside in order to sign, because there is an actual key inside the machine. You can do multi-party computation in which you split the keys.
As in the keys online, is that what you mean by that?
Well, it could be offline, but it is somewhere in the same place. While with multisig, that's never the case. With multisig, you do use the key in one place to do one signature. Then you do use another key in another time, another place to do another signature. And then the two signatures together on the chain, asynchronously, they unlock the coin, which is safer than putting the shards. You can do Shamir Shard Secret or any other secret sharing, but this has the same problem. At some point, somebody will recollect all the shards and have the full key. While in multisig, you recollect the signature, but not the key.
So it's not part like a partially signed Bitcoin transaction where you're signing it in separate stages. They're essentially grouping all of the signatures in one go and signing all together.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. In multisig, you collect the signature. So everybody must know where you're sending the coin, agree, sign, and now you collect the signatures. The signature cannot do anything else but confirm the document is signed. While if you collect the key instead of the signature, once you collect it, the key will be able to do everything, including something else, like spending the funds elsewhere. So it's not a good security practice in general, especially if you have an alternative. Now, the multisig on-chain, the Bitcoin multisig in P2SH, has a problem that it's more expensive, because when you spend the multisig, you will have to put on-chain all the signatures, and the problem that is less private, because you will show that you have a multisig. But the good thing is that with Taproot and signature aggregation, for example, Frost or Musig 2, now you can have off-chain signatures that still on-chain look like, they're still off-chain, but they are not key aggregation, they are signature aggregation. So the same safety of Bitcoin multisig plus the same UX and privacy advantage of off-chain multisig. So at
when
this point,
the wallets implement this, of course, like the wallets, they still, you know, things get released, but then the actual use isn't necessarily there once the technology is, right?
So I would say the only reason for which somebody will have a realistic case to do this on Bitcoin will be if their security scheme, their security ceremony is so complex with so many rounds and deals and hierarchy parts that representing that on a normal Bitcoin multisig is crazy. If that's the case, maybe. In this case, but even in that case, you still use a SegWit address for the simple reason that when you spend, you will save in fees. So the fact that they're using a legacy address looks to me like they really don't know how to do any better, and probably they just used out-of-date tech.
You're definitely making the bullish case for multisig. That's 100%. And I appreciate that, right? Because that does seem to be the safest option in the long run. And you know what? It is just getting easier and easier to implement. Guys,
could still be overkill for a single user.
Yeah.
So a single user may still be, but if it cannot manage complexity, but now it's with nunchuck and it's getting easier and easier.
Yeah, it is. Guys, this is going to wrap up the fireside chat, which probably could go on a whole lot longer, but we are going to move it on over to Wrecked. Wrecked is brought to you by CipherSafe. Check them out at ciphersafe.io. Look, we were just talking about multisig. We were just talking about cold storage. That's right, guys. What goes along with that is storing your seed. Check out the upside down, but awesome, CipherGrid. Absolutely amazing way to store your seed. And it comes with this awesome little punch tool, as it should. Anyways, that is on ciphersafe.io. If you appreciate fine Bitcoin art, that's right, 16 ounces of solid titanium. This is the Bitcoin Rolo Triangle from ciphersafe.io. Beautiful craftsmanship. And like I said, 16 ounces of solid titanium. If you love the pet rock type of stuff, check out the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle at CypherSafe.io. All right, guys, for Wrecked, we've got just one story, but it is probably the biggest story right now. That's right, and it's not ETFs, right? It's not ETFs, and it's not Fred Krueger, which I know if you pay attention to my Twitter, you'd probably think it would be Fred. But anyways, he doesn't answer me. I don't know why. I'm probably just a rude asshole. Anyways, okay, back to the COPA stuff. Here we go. This is a great tweet. Walton, thank you very much. At JN Gross, been following COPA. Right case pending in the UK. And I have to say, in 35 years of litigating, I've never seen anything in 35 years like the level of document falsification in a lawsuit by a party. Okay, now look, post a link to this in the show notes. I've got several clips on BSV. So the COPA case is coming up, I believe, February 2nd or February 5th. I don't remember the exact date. I know that it's like, I think it's like 10 days away. I could be wrong. Anyways. So look, in the last 2 weeks, I have seen two forgeries. Okay. Two forgeries that just came out of community members of BSV. And I put community in quotation marks and members in quotation marks because I believe that they are all paid shills. Okay. Now.
Well, maybe members in another sense could be.
Maybe members in another.
You can remove the quotes.
Well played. Well played. So now, this is my whole thing. Okay. Because you've been in this space longer than both Walton or I. And you've seen this crap play out from, I think, much more the beginning. And I ask you this. Do you believe that when Craig inevitably loses, yeah, I'm taking that bias, I believe he inevitably loses COPA, okay, this COPA trial, does BSV actually die or does it just continue, like you just said, like one of the zombies, right?
So somebody noticed already, I think it was Janset maybe, and Bitcoin Uncensored back in the days in 2013, saying that killing, very, very good. Killing these things is basically impossible. So as I say, zombies, they loot pieces, they're slow, but they're also very hard to stop completely. You can reduce them to just little pieces of rotten meat, and they move around a little bit. They cannot hurt you, but it's still somehow moving. So shitcoins are so hard to kill it, definitely, because the brilliant architecture of Bitcoin allows them to basically reduce their security to a level in which just two nodes can go on pretending that this stuff is going, and the blocks eventually, the block difficulty will eventually adjust. And so in most variants of shitcoins, the coin will stay around to some degree. The good thing would be to reduce it to a degree which is the same. So to I would say to not a pathological, but an organical and physiological degree. For example, in any society, there is the guy that is selling the crystal that cures cancer. That's okay. I mean, if your relative gets cancer and gets the crystal and dies, you're pissed. But I mean, this is like a normal gullibility in a society. There will always be the girl that maybe gives too much credibility to horoscopes. Who cares? It's still something which is confined. If you go to a normal astrophysics conference and somebody comes to read you the horoscope, other astrophysics will not be pleased. The problem with Bitcoin and shitcoins is that the Overton window expanded to include something which is way worse than horoscopes, which is basically shitcoins, inside of serious stuff, people that really want to protect their finance from inflation, from confiscation. So there is a real grown-up discussion where this noise of random pseudo-technical gambling is taking over legitimacy. So something like BSV, in my opinion, after Craig Wright is destroyed, as I hope it will be, he will be, will go back to something super niche. You will still find somebody cheering for it because people is weird and we have many billions of people around the world. So somebody will still shill it and somebody will still maybe run a GigaMed node. And also there is the problem of recovering the sunk cost. So Kevin Ayer, right now, he will have to recover some costs. So he cannot just say, okay, I was wrong. I just sponsored a fraud. So we'll have to try to double down a little bit to find an exit strategy.
Gambler's fallacy.
Yeah, exactly. BSV, and he's a gambler enabled as a profession, so he should know better, but he will not. So probably he will try to double down to cut the cost. So this will not be the end of BSV, but at least the end of the mainstream credibility, which in my opinion was a very instructive moment in Bitcoin, because when I've seen for the first time the articles about Craig Wright, it was, I think it was like 2015, I don't remember. But I remember that many people that I respect were telling we should never comment, never discuss, because we give him more visibility by commenting. So if you keep yelling at the scammer, you're just giving him more satisfaction. But I think that Craig Wright was a clear manifestation that that's wrong. If some scammer is well funded and well motivated, if you ignore him, you will just allow him free space to contaminate noobs and the mainstream, especially in the eternal September dynamic of Bitcoin, where new people are coming in and they're clueless. So if you don't protect the space, even the most obvious scammer will completely hijack the signal. So Craig Wright was a clear example of Craig Wright's thing is so stupid that any minimal level of education back in the time made by authoritative figure will have stopped him completely. Instead, it was ignored as a strategy, and I think it was a wrong strategy, in order to let him die out. And now we're at this point. Of course, the fact that many court systems, including the UK court system, are fucking jokes did not help, because in no sane universe, a troll like Craig Wright, after all the forgeries, after all the nonsense, can actually force somebody to defend himself to spend millions of sterling of pounds to enter the trial. It's crazy.
Yeah, I believe the legal system in the UK does its job very well, which is to pay the lawyers that work in it. And so you can fight a case for years and years and years, and the lawyers are more than happy to collect the fees.
That's fair.
Yeah, it is. And I want to go back to before we wrap up the segment, just to touch base on Calvin Iyer. He has no choice, like you said, to continue to double down. And we are now maybe 10 days away, like I said, from the COPPA trial. BSV is supposed to go to $1,000. I just want to point that out. Like these insane, outlandish claims. And I just want to also point out, that the narrative that's already being spun, okay? The narrative that's already being spun is that essentially COPPA is not about justice, all right? It's about crushing BSV, the real Bitcoin, okay? So to your point, this never ends. But at the same time, okay, I totally agree with you. Like, there's that balance, right? You can't give scammers too much oxygen, but at the same time, you can't let the conversations go on unopposed with this level of misinformation. Because you're right, in a vacuum, they will grow, right? Like, they're going to grow to take up the whole space. So
it's a subtle equilibrium. It's a subtle balance. Yeah. I agree that you cannot let scammers direct your day and just spend your day screaming at scammers, because there is some truth. The typical objection they raised to people like me, like maximalists in general, is that the more you scream scammer, 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 the more you desensitize the public to the world. So if everything is a scam, so nothing is a scam. The problem is that kind of everything is a scam, so it's true. So there's not much choice. But it's true that it's a very delicate balance. We have to find a way that we don't completely ignore bad stuff, but probably we have to also... But it's hard. It's not a science. It's like a very sensitive kind of choice.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. Guys, that wraps up Wrecked, and we're going to move it on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium. Up next, we have Hopium, sponsored by Represent. Represent are a Bitcoin-owned clothing and accessories brand based on the West Coast of the United States of America. They produce many fine garments like the shirt that I'm wearing, but this is a limited edition piece that you can't buy, but you can buy things nearly as cool if you go over to representltd.com and use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND for a discount on all of their goodies. Once again, that's representltd.com. Being a British Bitcoiner, I've often been compared to one of my least favorite Bitcoin. I don't really think this guy's a Bitcoiner. This guy's a fiat maximalist, advertising maxi, who uses Bitcoin to create a platform for himself. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Pedro McCuck. I have a tweet from here that I have him very much muted on Twitter, but occasionally someone shares something and then, you know, I see, you know, it's good for your mental health. I don't block people, but I do mute quite a few, and he's certainly one of them. So he said that his lawyers have confirmed that Craig Wright has had his final appeal denied by the Supreme Court. Essentially, this is the end of the line for Wright's substantive claim against him after 5 years of hell, blah, 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 a bit of crying. And then, you know, of course, we still have HODL and NORT and Cobra, Cobra's case, Cobra being the owner of Bitcoin.org, who were famously essentially told to not allow the white paper on Bitcoin.org to users in the UK, but if you use a VPN, you can still access it. And then we have a tweet here from friend of the show, HODL and NORT, quoting Craig Wright, who said, "I will personally hunt every dev until they are broke, bankrupt, and alone. Most BTC devs will fold. A few will be bankrupted, lose their families, and collapse. They will experience torment. The wonderful thing with Discovery is that I'm going to go through every little aspect of every dev's life. I am the punishment of God in cryptocurrency. If those had not committed great sins, God would not have sent a punishment like me upon them." All quotes from Craig Wright. And as Phil said, it is 10 days until Copa. By the time this episode comes, it will be a week before Copa. I think this is hopium because, yeah, this seems to be the end of the war from morally corrupt individuals to try and to try and slander BTC devs and Bitcoin plebs who want to speak the truth, who want to call out scams, and who deserve to be able to do so. So I'm very excited about this.
Okay, before Giacomo hits it, okay, I just wanna quickly say this. So it's interesting that you showed that tweet, okay, about Craig Wright saying that, because there was the tweet from Calvin today, okay, which I'll post in the show notes. Copa has been hurt by being forced to publicly expose that they are only in this to wipe out BSV. So this is a clear case of like narcissistic projection. Anyways,
victim mentality. Yeah.
Right. He's a victim now, but they're right. It's either they're a victor or a victim. That's right. They're never at fault. Right.
Yeah. Because insane. You need an extreme narrative. You cannot go back to normal and rational when you bullshit so much in one direction. So you are God, you are God's punishment. You are Attila the Hun. Now the only way back is to just reflect the bullshit with another hyperbolic bullshit. But now you are the victim of a cruel persecution against you. But anyway, I want to challenge a little bit the hopium. I think that locally speaking, the opium is right. This is over for HODL now. This is over. Well, not yet, but close to, hopefully. And also for Pedro, which I disagree with on many, many things. But about these, I think that many people were criticizing him because in order to Virtu Signal, he put himself in danger. But if you cannot even say that Craig Wright is a fraud publicly, I mean, that's a level at which any kind of responsible conservative attitude should basically probably concede to just freedom of speech. Like you have to be able to say that, and if you cannot survive that, that's it's good that you cannot survive. Just move away, sell your assets, go underground, because you cannot live in a world where you cannot tweet that Craig Wright is a fraud. I tweeted it as well, but nobody sued me. But I think he made the right choice. Even if it did it for visibility, it was the right choice. But the reason I'm not so optimistic in the long run is that Craig Wright managed to weaponize the legal system so much and for so long with starting from a ridicule claim, a ridicule personality, a certain amount of funds, which is big because Calvin Harris is rich, but it's not central bank level of money. So if they, with this kind of clown and this kind of pedo pimp funding him, they managed to actually do this much damage for this many years, even if now they lose, they basically open it up. If any attacker is not stupid and is paying attention, they know that anything better than Craig Wright, if something so stupid managed to keep the system hostage for so long, anything a little bit more subtle, remember that Julian Assange is now being detained for treason or for some other bullshit for extradition from the UK. But initially, there was a case built against him about rape. So this fake... Sweden. Then the case fell apart completely, but it remained there as an excuse to try to jail him, and then he escaped to the embassy, so everything started. Same stuff happened to Ross Ulbricht, like the murder for hire bullshit was never brought to court because there was just one log written by one corrupt cop without any kind of forensic evidence. And he always denied, and the victim always denied it, chronic pain. But the fact that this was circulated was enough to, so like you say, well, this guy was jailed two life sentences without parole for a website. I heard that he was also a killer for hire, or the opposite. So the Craig Wright situation, I think that created a great rational expectance that everybody can actually hurt Bitcoin developers or personality very, very hard as soon as you start to organize that at a level of charlatanism, which is not as low and cringe as Craig Wright level.
So essentially, the Craig and Calvin, creepy motherfucker, have essentially created the playbook for social and legal attacks against Bitcoiners and supporters. I think that's a fair comment. That's a very fair comment. Phil?
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know what? I never even looked at it like that, but that's exactly what they did. They just set the bar so low for what it takes to, you know, to sit there and cause commotion that now, to Giacomo's point, yeah, if a better quality scammer comes along, they kind of know, you know what? It's kind of interesting. It kind of goes back to the KYC stuff, right? That I know you know a lot about, but essentially, right? KYC doesn't deter the criminals. It just simply gives them a checklist to follow so they know what to implement in order to get through the gates. And it's exactly that. It's like you get to look at BSV now and say, hey, here you go. This is, you just need to step it up from this piece of crap, you know? it's brutal.
But let me restore some opium, though. There is a nice side effect to this. The nice side effect is that the only safe... So who is the guy that was not really impacted by this, so far at least? Satoshi Nakamoto. He used a meme... we used the memes, but used the meme. Of course, it was a different time. Nobody was looking for him, so it was easier to stay anonymous. But he did all the good thing. He created a purpose meme, and he ditched the meme after 2 years. So he didn't bank his reputation. He built a godlike reputation, and then he threw it away. Maybe Satoshi Nakamoto is still active in the Bitcoin community. It's just that we don't know, because maybe he's using another name or another meme to do something else. So if the Bitcoin core developers feel hunted, that's terrible. Personally speaking, it's horrible. But as a side effect, they may be forced back to the Satoshi-style anonymity, which is hard because also Ross Ulbricht tried to maintain that with DPR NIM. But there was some difference. Like Ross kept the NIM for very long. He tried to do several things with the NIM, while Satoshi did one thing. I create Bitcoin. Hello, I disappear. If you do that, you are safe from legal threats. The problem is that if you do that, you have to give up influence, which is not for the ecosystem a bad thing. Of course, influence is cool, because if I was very good for Bitcoin, I want my voice to be heard. I want to bank my reputation and credit, because I was good. I did something. I have proof of work. I want to show off. So I want to go to a core dev meeting, and I want to everybody to look at me with respect, because maybe I'm Greg Maxwell, I'm Sipa, I'm Luke. But if you don't do that because you're forced to give up the name, that means the reputation breaks down as a social heuristics. And now you have to evaluate every single core developer as a complete stranger and possibly an attacker. That will slow down protocol level development a lot, which in the great scheme of things, I don't even think is a bad thing going forward, at least. It will have a cost, like a cost of features, a cost of performances. But from the point of resistance to political attacks, the fact that we don't trust, there is no case of a Bitcoin bug being discovered after Satoshi left and fixed. The only bugs that have been fixed have been introduced by developers and then fixed. Not because they're evil, but because everybody trusted them. Some developers that were very good for Bitcoin, they did something and nobody checked because they were famous. And destroying the reputation, forcing everybody to use disposable names, would also do that. I mentioned before Z-Man of Lightning. This man is a great guy, but he's using the same name for 3 years, and everybody now respects the hell out of him, including me. If he was really scared for Craig Wright kind of threat, he will have to drop it and start anew, which would be a very interesting word to leave it. Very, very much more don't trust, verify.
I think I agree with this. It's going to be difficult for anonymous contributors to exist. And I actually had one of the Bitcoin core maintainers volunteer the information that all Bitcoin core contributors have to actually meet a maintainer in person. He told me this at TabConf, and then the next day denied it publicly when I asked him about it on a panel, unsurprisingly, perhaps. But anyway, I have a couple more stories before we wrap this up. The people say there is no Bitcoin community, but what I saw this week was a Bitcoin community coming together to fight FinCEN. Samurai, with some financial help from Odell and friends at 1031 VC wankers, who paid for it, they wrote some letter, and a whole bunch of Bitcoin companies, the Bitcoin community came together in support of this, and I think this is a good thing. Unlike, say, Wallet Satoshi, who preemptively quit the US, the FinCEN, who are trying to argue against privacy practices and want people to do things like reusing addresses. Samurai wrote a very strongly worded letter, which you'll be able to read in the show notes. And we had all of these companies join up and in support of that. And I think that's a very good thing. Gentlemen.
Well, yeah. Guys, you know, I'm not a fan of Samurai to the slightest. I have several disagreements of everything from the style to the content. This is a good thing, unequivocally. I'm very happy that everybody read in support. I think everybody should. Of course, I'm a little bit black-pilled about lobbying efforts. I think that ultimately the federal government will attack Bitcoin for obvious economical reasons. Yeah. Still, that doesn't mean that we should not slow them down. So in a war, you have the strategic choice and you also have the tactic choice. The tactic choice is try to keep the Overton window. So if you just don't react, people will normalize this kind of bullshit, like criminalizing privacy. So you have to react. You have to write the letters. You have to fight back as much as you can. We probably already know that the end game is Bitcoin being somehow persecuted by the federal US government and Bitcoin resisting on its technological merits in the black market. I think that's the most likely outcome.
Still, I have the same opinion.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that this is a waste of time or reputation. This is good because it pushes back against the Overton window and it also protects some experiments while it's like, also it's very time sensitive. One of the very interesting things is Satoshi, his comment about WikiLeaks, somebody saying, yeah, let's just support WikiLeaks. And he's saying, Bitcoin is too small. It's too soon to kick this wasp nest or something. We have to wait. We are bigger. And in a way, this kind of initiative give buy us time to improve the technology to become resilient to any kind of legal attack. So kudos to this initiative, and I'm completely for it.
Yeah, very well said. I like to see the Bitcoin companies come together, right, for a common cause that makes sense. To Giacomo's point, the government is the government. But something that we learn about war, right? When you're a prisoner of war, you know, depending on the type of situation, one of your missions is to keep the enemy as occupied as possible, wasting their time. Okay. So technically, right, like Bitcoin, like to your point, when that whole thing happened with WikiLeaks, Bitcoin wasn't really ready to be a prisoner of war yet, you know, or, you know, even people supporting it. But as it's grown, right, and it's taken on more and more supporters, Bitcoin kind of grows into that, into that strange role where it can effectively, essentially the people that support Bitcoin can effectively be these kind of tampering prisoners of war that essentially will waste the establishment's time. Because don't forget something, right? I think that people forget that you can't underestimate a human's will. And if you push a person far enough and they have nothing left to lose, then the desire for freedom can surpass everything else. And part of that desire for freedom comes from that desire for survival. You desire to survive, and so you desire to be free. And so as a result, I think that some of these institutions, right, like the government, that think that they can just, you know, kind of destroy something like Bitcoin, I think they don't really recognize what they're up against. So,
very well said.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, I have one final link that I'd like to share, and it's a couple of statistics. Just this week, the total U.S. debt went over $34 trillion. I feel like it was that's 10% more than it was this time last year, and up $42 billion overnight. These statistics, just the numbers don't make any sense anymore to me. But the reason I have it in the Hopium is because I think the more these ludicrous numbers keep going up, the more and more people are going to wake up to there's a real problem with the current financial system, and they start asking questions. That it spurs their curiosity, and hopefully it leads them to Bitcoin.
Yep, the best teacher is suffering, and people are starting to feel the contradiction of the fiat model more and more in their lives, with double-digit inflation last year, with political confiscation and freezings of protester bank accounts. So everything is going worse, which is making people more aware. Plus, there is the sheer logical inconsistency of stuff. Like, how could this number be true? Or like people, one very fun thing is people starting to ask Yellen or others, why exactly 2%? So like you want to, so they come up and they say, we want to target 2% inflation. And then somebody starts to ask, yeah, but why exactly 2? Why not 3 or 1? We decided, and they don't know, because it's all based on absolute bullshit. They have no idea. They cannot answer simple question. They can only try to over bullshit you with complex kind of economical pseudo theories, but they cannot answer simple questions like why 2 and not 1.9. They don't know. It's just one number as good as any other. And so facing the number of the debt dynamic, I remember when the first time I understood inflation a little bit, not much, but is when I asked my father when I was little, why, if the government can print money, why they could not print money to give everybody food if people were starving? And my father answered, yeah, but why limit to food? I mean, don't you like a swimming pool? Yeah. So why not giving everybody a swimming pool? And then we went to an helicopter, and then going to extreme, you understand it doesn't make sense. If this kind of debt is sustainable, why not 10 times this? At this point, there is no reality check, no natural limit, no logic in this. It's pure magical thinking. Let's try to push it. Somehow we will survive, or we will die before we have to face it in a pure Keynesian way.
I want to vote your father into office, because if I can get a helicopter and a pool and all this good stuff.
Hey, but the funny thing is, Phil, is once he's in office, he'll be able to get you that pool and helicopter, right? I think that's how it works.
Yeah. No, that is how it works. None of that shit ends up working.
At least to a small circle of people, you can county loan in some money, yeah. but not
some
for everybody.
Some people are going to get a pool.
County on me harder, daddy. Let's go.
That's right. But look, I just, before we wrap up, I just want to say, that $34 trillion, I feel like, wasn't it like 6 to 8 months ago, it was only like $30 trillion? Or was that last
something
year?
Something like that. No, I swear, yeah, sometime in mid-2022, I feel like we ticked over the 30. I don't know. Yeah.
And it's just, anyways. So look, I do think that is hopium, because let's be honest, we all know the end game here. This never stops. The money printing never actually stops. Okay, so yeah, I'm good with that. All right, guys. That's going to wrap up the hopium, and it wraps up this episode of Pleb Underground. Giacomo, thank you so much for joining us. I think everybody knows how to reach you, but just for the sake of it, there might be somebody out there who doesn't know you or how to reach you. If somebody wants to hit you up, where do they find you? How do they find you?
Twitter, where I shitpost all day, Giacomo Zucco, my name on Twitter. Sorry in advance for what you will read. I'm not very agreeable on Twitter. Probably I will block you, or I already did block you. That happens. I mean, it's okay. If you really want to know what I'm doing right now, I'm doing several things. I'm advisor in several startups, and I'm doing too many things. But I'm trying to focus a little bit in something new, which is called PlanB.network, which is a gathering of educational resources in Bitcoin, done together with the Summer of Bitcoin people, the Coover Bitcoin Sovereign University people, and the Pleb, Bold.fund people, and many other people. So we're building that. It will take some time, but my goal is to have the greatest multi-language gathering of Bitcoin educational resources ever. We are organizing Cubo Plus in El Salvador and Lugano Summer School, and we are putting all of these inside the PlanB Network projects. So I'm very happy about that. So it's the first time I shill one single project, but I should start shilling it.
That's fantastic. No, we're going to put that in the show notes. Again, thank you so much. And guys, don't forget to check out our audio only versions of these episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream us sats, check us out on Fountain.fm. You can stream us sats through Breeze. Walton, how do we wrap this one up?
Fuckshitcoins.com. Please like and subscribe. We will see you next week. More toxic, what? More toxic than the